All right, welcome back to the old switcheroo where we're talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I'm Mike.
And I'm JMO. Thank you for joining us today on our quest to play through every retro game in the Nintendo Switch online catalog. There's over 200 of them, so we've kind of bunched them up into episodes for your listening pleasure. And before we get started, Mike, look, I know my titles have been a bit touch and go so far. My episode titles, right? Some might even say they're a bad idea because it's going to make these harder for people to find the content. But I'm excited to show you this one. Are you ready?
All right.
Welcome to episode 6, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Mega Vitamins, where we are discussing Dr. Mario and Dr. Mario 64. Tell me you get the reference, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, it should be Dr. Mario or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Mega Vitamins.
I know that. And you... Why did you have to empty my bucket on this? I knew that, okay? And the thought was that the title, that title is too long somehow, those extra three words. But also, I disliked that Dr. Mario was on the screen. You know what, Mike? There's no plea. We are discussing two puzzle games. We're going to start off with Dr. Mario on the NES, released in 1990. And before I dive in, Mike, I have two questions about your past, if you don't mind.
All right.
First of all, is there a doctor in the house?
There is. The doctor is in.
Yes. Okay. What are you a doctor of?
Technically, it says physics, although everything I do is astronomy related.
Oh, well, I mean, but Mike, isn't technically all of astronomy physics? It's the physics
of stars. That's kind
of
why they get away around with it. They actually created an astrophysics doctorate while I was there, which had a different course load. And so it was like, hey, so we've gotten approved to have a PhD in astrophysics. And it was like, do we get to take that? No.
So do people call you doctor? Like when you're walking around the college offices, do they like doctor? Like, is that a thing?
Not really, because everybody else is too.
Oh, okay. There's not like that one Wallowitz in the office where it's like, doctor, mister.
No, although they seem to be like, yeah, that is very much a real dynamic, though.
Is it? Wow. Okay. So doctors get a little huffy about your titles. And also, am I crazy? I swear I have a memory of you beating Dr. Mario at Miles Chen's house. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I don't recall that.
Okay. So we, Mike and I, were on the high school newspaper together, the Saga Scroll, and we would lay out the newspaper sometimes late into the night. So we would have like these layout parties, and our classmate Miles hosted one time, and he had an NES set up. And I swear you were the one who beat Dr. Mario. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Have you ever beaten Dr. Mario?
Not that I recall doing, but I also don't really have memories of playing this particularly. Like I know that I have, but it just, this never sticks with me.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let me go on the specifics of Dr. Mario here. Released in 1990, it was published by Nintendo, and it was directed by Gunpei Yokoi. He showed up in one of our previous episodes, the father of the Game Boy and the D-pad, so a huge innovator in the gaming space back in the 90s, and I guess 80s and 70s. It was designed by Takahiro Harada, who also is credited on working on the Metroid series, Metroid Fusion and Metroid Zero Mission, both of which we hopefully get to play. One of those is still not yet added to the service, but I think it's coming. And he was also a supervisor on the Sin and Punishment series. Mike, have you heard anything about Sin and Punishment in terms of 64 games and not just the concept?
No.
Okay. So Sin and Punishment is a really cool series that didn't make its way to the States for a very, very long time. And it's a really cinematic action game on the Nintendo 64. And it was really innovative for its time. And the other thing I wanted to mention about Dr. Mario is that it was had its music composed by Kirokazu Tanaka, who made also probably the most iconic puzzle soundtrack of all time. Mike, if I asked you to guess which puzzle game soundtrack was the most iconic, what would you say?
I would say Tetris.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he did the Tetris theme as well. And the Dr. Mario theme is no slouch. Like, I love the music in this game. So the fact that the same man made the Dr. Mario and the Tetris theme, like, how prolific. Like, what a show off.
Did he have anything to do with Columns?
Columns also has a good soundtrack, but not in my research, no. He did a lot of compositions for Nintendo music, but it didn't seem like he jumped over to Sega. I don't know how common that was back in the day.
I just wasn't sure if he was just like the puzzle music guy.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he definitely, if there was one guy who would be called that, I think it would be Kirokazu Tanaka. So let me read the description of Dr. Mario from the Nintendo Switch online menu. It says, feeling under the weather? Well, Dr. Mario has the cure for you. Help him fight bodies of nasty viruses with multicolored pills, eliminating those germs faster than they can multiply. Rotate the pills as they drop and gain a higher score by aligning multiples of the same color. Clear all of the viruses to move on to the next round. But watch out as the pills start dropping at a faster rate. Not enough of a challenge? Try competing against a buddy and prove that you're just what the doctor prescribed. So, you know, it's pretty good in that it's communicating what the game is, a drop puzzler like Tetris, or as Mike mentioned, Columns. This is a whole genre of games of shapes falling from the top of the screen, and you need to rotate them and position them in specific places before they reach the bottom of the screen. It is a weird description, though. Mike, did any of that description strike you as kind of odd?
I don't think so.
Okay, so what I thought was weird is that it says you got to kill these germs faster than they can multiply. And that's the central gameplay mechanic, is that you are trying to create rows of four shapes of the same color in a row. And once you get four in a row, they'll all be eliminated. So hopefully one of the shapes is a virus, because your goal is to clear all the viruses from the screen. But it says you have to eliminate those germs faster than they can multiply. Do the germs multiply in the game? I can't think of a single time I ever was playing and germs started showing up on the screen.
I did not ever have them do that either.
Right. But wouldn't that be a cool gameplay mechanic? Like, you know, especially if it spread and kind of filled more of the screen. I'm no game developer, but I feel like that's a pretty good idea. And I'm also sort of tickled by the description, because you've read the manuals. For those of you who are not aware of our show, I'm a retro gamer, but Mike is gaming retro. And what that means is that I'm going to access all the modern conveniences of playing retro games today, such as save states and rewind features. Mike is not going to do so, but he will be using the manual. So he's really getting the authentic experience if you were a kid playing this in 1990. And so, Mike, the description here, it describes Dr. Mario's main weapon, the central mechanic of the game, is pills. But, you know, the manual calls them something else, right?
I think in there it talks about them as vitamins.
Yeah, megavitamins, which I didn't know a megavitamin was a thing. Did you know megavitamins are real? Like, that's a medical term?
Not that kind of doctor.
Right, physics doctor. So apparently megavitamin is, you know, sort of like the, what do they call those vitamin C tablets you drop in your drinks, airborne tablets, where it's a vitamin, but it's such an insane amount of the vitamin that it's supposed to like kind of shock your system. So I guess that's actually a real term. So I was amused by that. So let's get into the trivia section for Dr. Mario, which we're calling Knowledge is Nintendo Power. So this was we were going to talk about the cover first. Can I talk about the cover, Mike, and then we'll get into the trivia?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Got my notes out of order. So going over the box art for this game, this is a classic cover to me, like instantly recognizable. I love that it uses the pills as the background for the image, because it's showing the gameplay, but it's also very aesthetically pleasing. I did find it strange, though, that although Dr. Mario is instantly recognizable, Mike, what's your thoughts on the opinions, or what's your opinion on the appearance of the viruses when you look at the box art here for the original Nintendo release?
So the red is some sort of devil.
He's got two horns.
The blue is a rabbit.
Guys, because the buck teeth and the bigger ears. Oh, okay. I didn't even put that together.
And the yellow may be related to Shrek.
He's a very the antennae, or I guess those are just Shrek's ears based on the earwax he pulls out of them. Yeah, it's very, very Shrekish. The designs for the viruses don't match what they look like in the game. And they, to me, resemble a lot more of Boglins. Mike, did you have a Boglin when you were a kid? I'm showing you an image of one here.
Yeah, and I still don't know what those are.
Boglins were these really cool hand puppets that were sold in the 80s. They've been referenced on Rick and Morty. And it was partly designed by Jim Henson, if you can't tell by looking at it. And it was really cool because, yeah, it's a traditional hand puppet, but it also came with little arms dangling from the puppet, so kind of creating more of a sense of the creature. It had a tail out the back as well. But its big innovation was that you could control the eyeballs. By sticking your fingers in these little special slots in the puppet, you could make the eyes look different directions. And it's based on, you know, a very kind of cheap version of how Jim Henson really made creations like the Muppets or the creatures you see in Labyrinth. And, you know, I feel like this was a common design when you're creating a goblin or a creature, kind of giving them big eyebrows and kind of a big mouth. But I just thought it was sort of interesting, you know, that it didn't really match the design of the game. I do like the doctor being turned into RX. Mike, do you know why RX is the abbreviation for prescription? It's actually pretty interesting.
I do not offhand know why.
So I'm probably not going to say this the way they said it back then, but in ancient Latin, RX was how you would write recipe. And early medicines, you know, were just combinations of herbs ground together, so they would be called recipes. And so that's why RX is the abbreviation for prescription. What do you think of the cover of Dr. Mario? Any thoughts?
I mean, I think using the pills as a background does seem to give a pretty good intuitive idea of what kind of game this is. Right. I do find myself oddly distracted by Mario in this.
Really? I thought he doesn't look quite how he does today. Is that kind of like Uncanny Valley thing for you? He looks just a little off.
I was going to say more. The two things I noticed, number one is that the way he holds a thermometer, like it's a pen or something, or like he's got his hand fully wrapped around it in just a weird way.
Yeah. I think you're right. And then his other hand is a clipboard. So it's almost like he thinks he has a pen and someone pulled a hilarious prank on him or something. You know what? Now that you said it, I can't unsee it.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the joke of a proctologist looking for their, that starts to write and is holding a thermometer.
Keep it classy, Mike. Keep it classy. I don't know who's going to hear this, but that is well done. The Japanese cover.
The other thing I was going to say, and actually, this is true on both covers.
Yeah, Japanese and North American release.
Is Mario's mustache and eyebrows always a different color from his hair, or is that just a hair thing? Because he has brown hair and like a black mustache and eyebrows. And
I think you just uncovered a huge conspiracy. Does Mario dye his hair? Well, this does happen sometimes. Some people have facial hair that doesn't quite match their head hair, right? I swear I've seen that naturally.
Yeah, like that can happen. It's just an odd design choice to me.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, imagine Mario with a brown mustache. It just seems sort of wrong. And modern Mario, no, he's always been this way. Modern Mario games, he doesn't have black hair, right? I don't think so. Gotta look this up. And this is gonna be a Berenstain Bear situation, kind of like I'm afraid to look up a picture of Mario right now. Yeah, he very clearly has, even in the modern designs, brown hair and a black mustache. It never occurred to me either. So the Japanese cover here, for the Famicom system, you know, it's similar. I think it's less appealing from a layout perspective. You know, it's now granted part of that is that the box shapes were different in Japan, but I don't know. It just seems sort of not as postery, unless you're talking about like a medical poster. The Japanese cover, you know, still has Mario, still has the viruses, although interestingly drawn to look how they look in the game. which I sort of prefer. I really love the design of the viruses. Hey, physics doctor, Dr. Mike here. What is that in the background? What structure are we looking at? There's some kind of scientific, that's like an atomic structure, right? We got nitrogen, hydrogen.
Yeah, it's some sort of compounds, although I'm not sure what.
Okay. I have a coworker who has a daughter who's a chemist, so maybe I'll send her a picture and we'll see. I thought it was funny in the Japanese cover, you know, the viruses are sort of, let's say, the size of a nickel, but it says multiplied 10 times, which means that those are pretty big. Shouldn't that have been like zoomed in 100 times? See what I'm talking about, Mike? At the bottom left of like the camera lens focusing, times 10 doesn't seem like enough zoom if you're looking at a virus and seeing its face.
Yeah, but I think without thinking too much about it, I suppose, or first of all, it just kind of gives the idea of we're looking through a microscope right off the bat. Although I will also point out, they clearly have to be the same size as half a pill. So these are large viruses.
Well, I don't think the pill is part of the diagram. I think that's just an aesthetic thing.
Yeah, but I mean, so when it gets into the game, they have to be large.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. That's a good point, actually, because if you're throwing the pills in there, the megavitamins, if you will, every virus is the size of half a pill. Those are very big viruses.
Although I will say it is actually weird when you think about the fact that
Very small pills.
Yeah. Well, for a game where you're fighting virus, trying to fight off viruses, first of all, there's just the entire, we're fighting off viruses by just throwing lots of pills at you, which is seems yeah. questionable. But
yeah, I was wondering
the thing game... about this as a concept to me.
Yeah. Is that
is all of this is not taking place in any representation of a human body. It's taking place in a pill bottle.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we all kind of think of this game, and in fact, in the story mode of the sequel, you know, it very much implies that these megavitamins are used to cure people. But this is a clinical test. If you look at the screen, in fact, I can kind of go to a screenshot. Actually, in all iterations of the game, it's always pills being thrown into a jar. So it sort of implies like this is sort of a research lab situation, which makes versus mode incredibly interesting, because then it's like, are you competing commercial prescription developers? Are you big pharma trying to screw over your competitors and sabotage their efforts to develop a cure for something? There's a whole meta story here that I think is, first of all, questionable in an era where, you know, opioid overdose is one of the most common forms of death in America. Also, there's a huge swath of this country that thinks that people are over-vaccinated. So I was like, I'm just curious if this game, you know, would be considered controversial if certain people cut their eyes on it.
I do like the idea of a vaccinated version of Dr. Mario where you start the game and there's no viruses.
Yep. You just instantly win.
I actually wonder if the reason it is a pill bottle is because they didn't want a game where it's an outline of a character that you just keep throwing pills into the mouth of.
Yeah, because when you think about the design of it, you could very easily imply that this is like, you know, someone's body cavity and the top of the jar could just be a mouth. But yeah, you know, even back when this game was developed, that probably wouldn't have been seen as good iconography for your game. Mike, would you like to hear some trivia on the first Dr. Mario?
Yes, let's hear some trivia.
So here is our finally, at long last, our section, Knowledge is Nintendo Power. So this game is the first game we've got to talk about for our podcast, where in the Nintendo Switch Online menu, you get multiple versions. You can select the commercial release, or you can boot up SP, and that stands for special. There's a special edition of a lot of games on the Nintendo Switch, most of them in the NES catalog, but it's a brilliant concept that I wish Nintendo had kept, you know, going with, in where you boot up the game and there's already a game in progress. There's a save file for you. And this would be super helpful in something like GoldenEye, where you could just unlock all of the multiplayer features for your player, you know, lasers and DK mode and all the things that we remember loving as kids, but don't necessarily want to spend 20 plus hours re-unlocking. And, you know, unfortunately, they haven't done that recently. In fact, I think Nintendo kind of forgot about this feature. But did you boot up the special edition of Dr. Mario? Did you give it a try, Mike?
No, I think I forgot to re-enable the ability to see those.
You filter them out. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty forgettable unless, you know, you have it on your mind like I do. So the Dr. Mario Special Edition you can boot up, it starts the game at the end of level 20 on high speed. And if you beat the game or beat level 20 on high speed, there is a cutscene and it shows the viruses standing on top of a tree. And it gets picked up by a spaceship. Now, Mike, hopefully you didn't see it when I accidentally showed images earlier. Does this spaceship in the screenshot I'm showing, does it look familiar to you? You still there?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
I'm thinking.
you got to make thinking noises. This is a podcast.
See, I know that if I pause,
yes,
I can cut those gaps. Okay. Out.
Sorry, doctor. Go ahead. Spaceship. What are your thoughts on the appearance of the spaceship? Because it's pretty interesting, I think.
There's an element of it that gives me sort of the vibe of, like, the Close Encounters ship.
Boom. Yep. I think that's absolutely what this is. It is also a little similar to the ship from E.T., but when you look at the posters for Close Encounters of the Third Kind, it's almost the same visual. It's just instead of the tree, you have, like, the mesa from that movie because it was, like, you know, a desert setting. But
it's Devil's Tower.
Devil's Tower. There you go. Yeah. Where is that?
Wyoming.
I see. There you go. Doctor right there. But this implies the viruses are aliens, right? It's like an alien virus. That's my read on it. I think it'd be weird if these aliens just were abducting viruses. Like, that could be potentially really dark. They're culling Earth for, you know, the worst diseases. So Dr. Mario Online RX was released for the Wii in 2008 as a downloadable title. Did you ever this one to try? Did you ever try Dr. Mario Online?
No.
It was, you know, what it sounded like. You could play Dr. Mario against other people using, you know, Nintendo's internet connection. You could also play with your friends just as Wiimotes. But my favorite part of Dr. Mario Online was the ability to play with the balance board. Remember the Wii balance board? You ever see one out in the wild? They were actually one of the top selling video game peripherals ever created, but it was used to, like, for yoga and meditation. You could even use it as, like, a scale, but you could control Dr. Mario Online using without your hands. You would stand on the balance board and you would lean left and right to move the falling pills left or right. You would rotate the pill by squatting, and if you squatted more on the left hand side, it would rotate to the left. If you squatted with more weight on the right hand side, the pill would rotate clockwise, and you would make it drop faster by standing on your tippy toes. Mike, what do you think of that?
That is way too much work.
I had a feeling you were
doing that much exercise when I'm trying to get rid of viruses.
Yeah, you don't want to get healthier that way. Also,
I have my limits.
Yeah, everyone does. Dr. Mario was sort of palette swapped into Dr. Luigi for the year of Luigi. It was this weird attempt to make Luigi a thing during the years of the Wii U. Dr. Luigi, very similar in gameplay, except some of the pills would fall in L shapes. Which, I don't know, man. Like, Luigi, you're not cute. I'm not down for that. And easily the most interesting trivia I found about Dr. Mario was Dr. Mario BS version. And no, I'm not kidding. That's actually what it's called, Dr. Mario BS version. It was a graphically enhanced port of Dr. Mario that was downloadable on the Super Nintendo via a peripheral called the Satellaview. And it was released in April 1995. Mike, ever hear of the Satellaview?
I have not.
Yeah. Did you ever have any? So back when Mike and I were growing up, you know, we saw the rise of the internet. You know, we were both born in the 80s and most of our childhood memories are from the 90s. But, you know, we remember America Online. We remember, you know, pre-social media. And there was a few years there where there was, like, these things you could buy that would technically connect to the internet. There was also one, for the Sega Genesis. Did you ever have any of these early online gaming things for your cartridge-based 16-bit system?
No, really, for not really having a console. And then even when I did, not having internet for quite a while.
Yeah, it was interesting. So this was available to gamers in Japan and Europe using a special cartridge called the BSX. And I'm probably not going to say this properly, but it's just great. So I got to make an attempt at it. The game was called Sore wa Namae Nosumareta Machi no Monogatari, or The Town Whose Name Was Stolen. Get a load of that. What a title. It was one of the very first games with online functionality, provided you connected your Super Nintendo to your satellite radio. The game bears a striking resemblance to Earthbound, and it allowed players to explore a strange, deserted town. But by entering the buildings of said ghost town, you could use special apps like calculators, read the day's news, and most interestingly, you could download full games during the Super Famicom hour. Every night on St. Giga Radio, a DJ would inform listeners of what they could download, as well as running trivia contests and popularity polls. The service was discontinued in 2000. Mike, any thoughts on tuning in on the radio to download games onto your Super Nintendo?
It really makes me redefine pirate radio as a concept.
Yeah, so it never kind of occurred to me that, you know, with satellite radios, you could send limited data, you know, that this... I had no idea this existed, but, you know, pretty cool. And, you know, it's kind of a forgotten little wrinkle of Nintendo's history. Well, so let's go into what we like and dislike about Dr. Mario, or a section that we like to call Joy Pros and Joy Cons. I did not like Dr. Mario growing up. In fact, I would even say I disliked the game. And so when it was time to film this episode, I was kind of, you know, rolling my eyes and expecting to just grin and bear it. I fell in love with Dr. Mario. What's your opinion on this puzzle game?
Interestingly, I'm going to say I have competence at this game.
Yeah, you're good.
But at the same time, I don't think I ever was having fun with this game.
Oh, no, I swear this was one of your favorites. That's so funny. And maybe that's also why I thought you beat it. I must be thinking of somebody else. So what is not fun about Dr. Mario in your mind?
I think if I had to hone in on it, is because this is just using the at least four in a row or at least four vertically, and right, it has a weird sort of pacing, especially when you're playing against something so that you have pieces that are dropping in.
So what Max is referring to is that when you have an opponent, the way that you are playing against each other is that when you clear blocks, it will send sabotage blocks to your opponent, which are just these little individual pieces of color that sometimes you can lay up into a combo. It'll just actually be kind of mana from heaven. But most of the time, it's going to fall and interrupt your plan and your layout.
Yeah, so I think it just feels like this never reaches a satisfying level of combos for me in a way that this starts to get fun in the way that I think of
other puzzle games doing,
because the strict only the rows or only the columns element just seems to slow it down.
So you're saying, like, you think the game, had it allowed diagonals perhaps just to get a few more combinations popping off, it might have been a better game in your mind?
I think if it was that, or if
they would form like a square.
Yeah, like if you could form a square, or if they could move faster, or something about that. And I can't really pin down what it is. And so as I got to higher levels, it almost gets tedious in a sense, where it's like, I can do this, but it just doesn't quite feel fun.
Doesn't hit that sweet spot, and you kind of look for that in a puzzle game. I thought the concept was really easy to understand, but I thought it was engaging in that, unlike in other puzzle games, I found myself in a lot of situations where, like, okay, I see a match at the bottom of the screen, and I do have a narrow way that I can maneuver this one pill, you know, through kind of tunnels and chasms that I've created on the screen to get that perfect match. I thought that was stressful in sort of a fun way. The music, you got to give me the music, Mike. Like, you enjoy the way this game sounds, right? Like, it's iconic.
Yeah, and I don't recall knowing that that is what this is from, but it immediately reminds me of something like 20 years ago. There's like a high school choir that had done an a cappella selection of
Dr. Mario,
of video game songs in general, and like they act out like Tetris and stuff.
Cool.
And this music was in there, and it was one that, so I recognize it from that.
Yeah. And, not the game. And then you played the game, you're like, oh, this is from that a cappella video.
Yeah, it kind of filled in that's where that one is.
Right. So another thing I like about this game, though, is it's brutally challenging. I mean, there's no denying that. But since pills have only three possible colors, there's red, blue, and yellow, is that the primary colors? Yeah, that's the primary colors, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So, you know, you can have a pill that's red, blue, or blue, yellow, or just yellow, yellow. And since there's only three colors on the screen, you rarely find yourself with a useless piece. There's almost always a good place to put the pill somewhere. The question is, can you find it before it's too late? Yeah. And that eliminated.
Find it odd that the manual does explain all six color combinations. Like, it is a, these are all the possibilities. And it's like, there is not so many or such a weird system here that this needed an explanation.
Yeah, for sure. And I like the viruses. I thought, you know, the viruses being your antagonist, the pieces you're trying to clear. But as we talked about when we were looking at the cover, the viruses have personality. Like, one of them's kind of the goofy one, and one's like the angry one, and they have little horns and little smirks. And I thought it gave this a level of personality that, like, Tetris, for example, is sort of lacking. And I found, you know, seeing the cute little viruses dancing in the corner of the screen, and every time you clear one of their color, they get like knocked over. And when you clear all of them, they just get eliminated. It gave this idea of like, okay, I have a target. I have a visible antagonist. Even though it's just happening in a jar, I felt like there was more story to what I was doing than I'm used to in puzzle games. Do you see what I'm saying?
I mean, I do. The only thing I noticed that they would do is disappear when I eliminated them, because I guess it's a thing that, because it's happening with the game, I'm totally ignoring it. So like, I wasn't looking over at that.
Yeah, it's purely visual. There's no advantage to looking at the animations of the virus in the bottom corner. It's just, and Nintendo actually does this kind of a lot, especially in these old retro games. They'll fill the screen with, you know, the title of the game and just little aesthetic things. But it's really smart. It's making the image condense enough that it can graphically handle quick movements.
It is interesting to note that here Mario does have a mustache that matches his hair.
I was waiting for you to notice that. I was like, he's going to see it eventually. In-game, Mario has a brown hair and a brown mustache. And I'd argue that doesn't look like Mario now. That looks like some other guy. Someone else imitating the Doctor. So, you know, oh, and by the way, I thought you might find this interesting. According to the Nintendo comic system, which I didn't know this existed, it seems similar to Sonic the comic, where back in the 90s, they would make comic versions of some of their most popular games. So the viruses are, the red one is fever, the blue one is chill, and the yellow one is called weird. And fever has fire powers, chill commands the cold, and weird can forcibly transform people into different shapes and animals.
I think they really missed a step there for that to be malaria.
What do you mean?
Yellow fever.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe they didn't want to make it an actual virus. I don't know. So, you know, things I don't like about Dr. Mario, a single mistake is punishing in this game, because since you are matching pills, your pills are your primary way of clearing blocks, it's so much harder to clear blocks horizontally rather than vertically. And so that means that to undo an error, you're probably going to have to stack pills on top of your mistake in order to clear it. But you lose the game when your pills stacked to the top of the screen. So fixing your errors actively inches you closer to death. Or in other words, things almost always get worse before they get better. So I found this game stressful. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's part of it is, you know, a small misplacement, a pill not rotating quite as fast. It's very hard to sort of recover from it. I think that's probably also made a bit worse because the pills will drop if there's nothing below them, but the viruses will stay put. And that starts you up so far up.
Yeah.
That really does mean you can end up in a situation where you have stuff built up on one side where you can't really connect anything to it because you have to build 2/3 the way up the screen to then try to clear that.
You can die so much faster than you know other puzzle games that I actually thought this started as an arcade game. I was like, that's an easy quarter muncher. You know, you put your quarter in, you could lose in 30 seconds, easy. But actually, you know, the arcade version came later. I also was really annoyed. Mike, you like Tetris, right? You're a Tetris boy.
Yeah.
So if I ask you to explain a T-spin, are you familiar with T-spinning?
I'm not.
You do this. You just don't know the term for it. T-spinning is a term in Tetris where, you know, you have a T-shape and the T-shape has touched down, but the game hasn't locked it in place yet. So even though it's touched the bottom of the screen or it's touched another block, you can still rotate it as it's sitting on the ground for like half a second. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you ever do that?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think about this.
It's an advanced technique that pretty much all competitive Tetris players do. And you can do it in this game as well. After your pills touch something, you have a split second to keep rotating it. But it's so short. It feels like it should be like, you know, a millisecond longer. And so it felt like I was being denied a clever trick that I had thought of. And that just doesn't feel good in the game. There's also not much gameplay variety. There's one player mode and two player mode. But there's nothing in the way of story progression other than the aforementioned UFO scene. Mike, do you have any other thoughts on Dr. Mario before we head over to its sequel?
I mean, I will say I don't necessarily hold anything against it for not having a story mode because I'm not going into a puzzle game expecting a story mode. I'm expecting puzzle.
I guess what I mean, though, is that a lot of modern puzzle games, as you play through the one player mode, there will be new wrinkles to the gameplay that get added. So it's like, oh, now there's spike pieces and those will like pop your pill. Or now your jar is really narrow, and so it's like you have less room on the left and right. There's just nothing in the way of one level feeling different to the next other than how many viruses are on the screen and like what sort of configuration they're in. And that's criticizing a game that, you know, was one of the pioneers of the genre. It's not really fair to criticize one of the very first puzzle games for not having more features. But I'm just saying, like, playing it these days, you know, once you played it a bit, there's not a whole lot of surprises. That makes sense.
I guess I think that's not something that I go into it expecting. It's not something I go into a modern game expecting either. I kind of expect that this is a very self-contained gameplay loop, and it's a lot more about getting better at this, getting faster, more precise than it is about getting, new things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, speaking of new things, should we head to Dr. Mario 64?
Let's go through, and I guess we'll skip Dr. Mario's 2 through 63.
Oh, you know, I used to bring my Nintendo 64 in on the last day of school because I actually have a really cool lesson about Mario 64's first level, perfectly following story structure. There's literally a rising action. You know, the climax is denoted by a music change. It's just a really fun English lesson while the kids are playing. And so when I would boot up the game, I would go, okay, by show of hands, who played Super Mario 63? And there was always one liar who would raise his hand. I was like, ah, I exposed you. So let's go on to Dr. Mario 64, released in 2001, once again published by Nintendo. It was developed by Hitoshi Yamagami, and he had his hands in nearly every Nintendo puzzle franchise, including Yoshi's Cookie, Tetris, Panel d'Apon, and Pokemon Puzzle League. Mike, did you play any of these other Nintendo puzzle games? Because we're going to play some of them in this podcast.
Two of those I've never heard of before.
Which one? I'm guessing Panel d'Apon, the anime one that's not translated to English.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yoshi's Cookie, I've never heard of either.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a game on the NES that we're going to play in this podcast called Yoshi. And it's a puzzle game. It's a drop puzzle game. And Yoshi's Cookie, I believe, is the sequel. Don't quote me on that, though. I'm not 100%.
And actually, I may not have played. I'm not sure if I have any idea what Tetris 2 is either. So really, the only one I can definitely say I've played at all is I think I checked out Pokemon Puzzle League like 5 minutes worth after getting Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, it's a cool game, and we'll get into more details on that one, you know, when we do that episode. So let me read the description on the Nintendo Switch menu. It says, Dr. Mario 64, clear levels by matching vitamins. This vitamin matching puzzle game was released for the Nintendo 64 console in 2001 and features Dr. Mario armed with his trusty mega vitamins, treating patient after patient. Meanwhile, however, Wario and the mysterious Mad Scientistein are spying on Mario and hatching schemes to collect his cure-all. Of course, Wario just wants to get rich, but what's the story with Mad Scientistein? The intrigue doesn't end there. To get to the bottom of things, you'll face fast and furious action as all sorts of villainous types scramble to get their hands on Dr. Mario's mega vitamins. You'll need to defeat each opponent to progress, and to win, you need to clear your screen before your opponent clears theirs, or force them to retire by filling their screen with garbage. You can also test your mettle against computer-controlled characters or up to three friends. Challenge them to match you vitamin for vitamin in flash, marathon, and score attack modes. Let those capsules fly. So pretty fun description, I think, overall. You know, definitely lively and, you know, pretty much mostly accurate to what's actually in the game. I wouldn't say the story has any level of actual intrigue. Did you mess around with the story of Dr. Mario 64?
I did a bit. I was going to ask, because that features the characters a lot more and they've got this sort of cutout feel. Is that a Paper Mario style thing they're doing, or is that something else? Because I don't
actually. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. So Paper Mario is a fantastic game on the Nintendo 64. I've played through it entirely on Nintendo Switch Online. You'll play it eventually. But they don't look exactly like this. You know, they don't look exactly like they're so much cardboard cutouts that don't move. They're actually animated. I'm not sure why Dr. Mario 64 has that sort of paper cutout aesthetic. My theory, I'm going to go to a screenshot of it. My theory is that it just saves on animation because you have a little image of Mario being moved across the screen to simulate he's walking. Now you don't need to actually make his legs move. You know what I mean? It feels like it was a budget saving thing because I can't find any other connection to this and the Paper Mario franchise. It's also not communicated in the cover at all. Let's take a look at the box art for Dr. Mario 64. Mike, looking at the NES and the 64 covers side by side here, what's your impression?
I think losing the thermometer in his hand was a good idea.
He's just giving a thumbs up now. I mean, these, Mike, would you agree? These are the same cover.
They are fundamentally the same cover to the point that the changes seem slightly odd to me. Like, it's weird that they rearranged the three viruses on the cover.
So what Mike's referring to is that on the Nintendo cover, red is on the bottom, blue is in the middle, and yellow is on top. But in the 64 one, blue is on the bottom, red is in the middle, and yellow is still on top. Yeah, it's like, why was that necessary? Maybe it was a color balance thing. I don't know. What's strange, though, is that once again, the viruses are not drawn the way they appear in the game. They look like the Boglins, like the Jim Henson style. I do like, though, the way that Nintendo covers, you know, would really celebrate the four-player aspect, because that was a big thing for me growing up. In fact, Mike, some of our happiest memories are playing Smash Brothers and GoldenEye and, you know, getting four people around a TV. So definitely playing to their strengths there. So I have some Dr. Mario 64 trivia. Are you ready?
I will just add my final thought with those covers.
Yes.
Catch 4-player fever just really takes a different tone after the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Especially there's almost like a word within word there. Right? Catch 4-play your fever. Okay, Mike, keep it classy. What's wrong with you, Mike? Okay. Here's some trivia. Nearly all, in fact, pretty much all except for Dr. Mario, all the characters in this game are cameos from Wario Land 3. And, you know, despite, you know, it released around the same time, but I couldn't find a lot of crossover in terms of like the development staff. But what you're looking at here, Mike, is that, you know, from the Dr. Wario Land 3 manual, you can see that all these characters, well, except for the spear robot, but they appear in Dr. Mario as the people you have to beat from stage to stage. Have you messed around with Wario Land 3 yet? Because you're gonna.
I have not yet.
Okay. It's a fun game. It's a game where Wario, you play as Wario, but the catch is that unlike Mario games, he's invincible. And your goal is to hurt Wario in specific ways to get him around obstacles.
I have played this a bit now that you mentioned that. Now I remember, like, 10 minutes worth, but yeah.
Yeah, I recommended it to you via text a couple months ago. It's just interesting, though, because, like, you know, there's a spear enemy, and if he spears Wario, Wario very painfully inflates with air, but now you can access, you know, platforms you couldn't reach by floating. It's kind of a cool game. And to that end, the game has secret bosses. You fight powered-up versions of the rival characters. So in Dr. Mario 64, you can play through the story mode as either Wario or Mario. If you play as Wario, your final hidden boss is Metal Dr. Mario. And if you are playing as Mario, then Vampire Wario is your final boss. I feel like I said Wario and Mario like 1,000 times. But, you know, these boss characters, I think, are cool. And those are the two hidden ones. If you were wondering at the character select screen who the question marks were, that's who they are.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
That is such a weirdly, like, different set of final bosses to have. We were like,
yeah, there's no parallelism between them.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't know if you saw in the previous screenshot, but in the hidden cutscene before the final boss, Mario or Wario eat the mega vitamins. And apparently, if you're healthy and eat the mega vitamins, you either become a vampire or you get encased in metal, like Terminator style.
I heard that medicines can do that on YouTube last year.
There you go. Wait, are you joking?
I mean, I am, but it may actually also be on there.
Right. Yeah. There probably is somebody claiming that. Well, so just like how Dr. Mario was available via the forgotten Satellaview peripheral, I'm so excited, Mike, to introduce you to the IQ system. Ever seen this thing before?
I would never in a million years guess that IQ was going to be written I-Q-U-E.
Right. Well, I think it's because it's Q-U-E as in like you're queuing up. Oh, wait, no, that's Q-U-E-U. Wait, hold on.
No, that's Q-U-E-U-E.
Well, so the IQ system was a special version of the Nintendo 64 released exclusively in China in 2003, which for context, that's 2 years after the GameCube was released everywhere else in the world. So this was released when the system was already outdated, but that was by design. The IQ system had only 14 games. Dr. Mario 64 was included, and it was released in response to video game consoles being outlawed for sale in China in the year 2000. According to Lisa Hansen from market researcher Nico Partners, the government thought a ban was the best way to protect Chinese youth from wasting their minds on video games after a parental outcry. So, however, as noted by Kotaku writer Brian Ashcroft, the following year, online gaming exploded, hitting and grew by $100 million market. So the ban didn't exactly stop the problem. It was basically like when America had prohibition and said, no more alcohol. And everyone said, no, we're going to have alcohol. So the IQ player, Mike, was released using loopholes in the way the Chinese law was written. So just kind of looking at this image and based on what I've told you so far, any guesses on how Nintendo was able to release a new console in a country where video game consoles were illegal? Any idea what courtroom shenanigans they pulled to get this done?
I mean, there's a part of me that feels like this is going to, I want the answer to be like they sold something and it just turned into a video game console over time in the same way that like during Prohibition, they would sell like grape juice and say like, definitely don't store it this way because then it becomes alcohol.
So that's that you hilarious. Could,
yeah. Whereas just like, just blatantly, like definitely don't do this. You wouldn't want that to happen. My guess is based off the picture, because all I see is a controller.
Yes, is, that's one of them. You're smart. Go, go, go.
Did they just sell a controller that could play games and somehow that didn't count as a console?
Yes, because it counted as a television peripheral. Because it plugged directly into the TV. So smart on that. And I'll just give you the other one. Oh, but yeah, but if you look at the controller, that's why it's not the iconic N64 Trident, is that the chip, you know, all the operating system for the game system is in there. So it looks more like the Dreamcast. Or do you remember the very first Xbox controllers back when Halo first came out? It's referred to as the Duke, the really big old Xbox controller. You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, yes.
Yeah. Looks a lot like this.
I was also going to say, that makes me also then wonder if that is, or the other thing that made me suspicious of that is also the, there's like a plastic grilling in the center that I would think if you're putting components in there, you need some sort of venting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the other way that this got around the law is that it was only releasing old games, because like I said, by design, you know, it was selling old games to kids. So Nintendo was able to technically classify this as educational software, providing playable samples of gaming history. So it's not a video game. It's an educational example of video games. What do you think of that? I applaud it. I think it's great.
It's educational because the games are older games.
Yeah.
That
and there were, I think there were other things, like I think there were other educational applications, like I think you could download like calculators and like, you know, a dictionary or something.
That's just like if you showed someone like Debbie Does Dallas but said, no, this is educational because it's the past. And it's like, that is not remotely how this works.
You know, like, something
you can't just show things from the past and be like, see, it's history. That doesn't...
Well, if you're getting around a stupid law, apparently you can. I have to admit, I didn't in a million years think there'd be a Debbie Does Dallas reference in my Mario episode. Well, I guess I'm not telling my students about this podcast, Mike. Thanks a lot. Okay, so let's get into some thoughts on Dr. Mario 64. Joy pros versus Joy cons. I thought it was more visually varied than the original. I mean, pretty obviously there's 15 different characters, there's multiple different stages. So in the back of the screen, you can be on a beach, you can be in the mountains, you can be in like a spider web thing. I'm going to guess that doesn't really matter to you, Mike, but I think it's, you know, it's nice. It's just a nice way to make your game look cuter and prettier. Any thoughts on the looks of the Dr. Mario 64?
I would say actually that whole different stages and like who you're fighting kind of stuff does remind me of, I can't remember if it's on, if it's a, something that we will eventually cross paths with or not, which was the Mean Bean Machine.
Yeah, that's on the Genesis. And this was, you know, this was a staple of puzzle games in the 90s, a bunch of them. I'm not sure which one did it first. I think maybe Tetris Attack did it first. But yeah, so, but do you enjoy that? Like, do you have fun picking a character and seeing their animations, or is it just sort of window dressing to you?
I mean, for me, it just is window dressing. I did wonder if the story parts did anything different depending on who you picked. So we've covered that a little bit.
Yeah, so I played through both Mario and Wario's story mode. And, you know, there's sort of an interesting little wrinkle about that. I'll skip to it here. So Dr. Mario and Wario are traveling through, you know, this land together, and they're trying to chase down Dr. Science Stein, who stole the mega vitamins. And most of the story is the same, like Mario and Wario will both get stuck in a spider web and you have to fight the spider. And, you know, it just doesn't really make a difference. But then their stories do kind of branch off into meeting other characters. But, you know, there's really nothing there as far as like quality of dialogue or any sort of interesting cutscenes, except for the very end. Dr. Mario's ending shows him curing the main villain. And off to the left, Mike, do you see the screenshot I'm showing in the bottom left corner? What does that look like to you?
It kind of feels like he's dead.
Yeah, well, Dr. Seinstein is being accosted by Wario off screen. You see him get dragged off screen in little, you know, little pow and blanks or whatever. And then, so I beat that and I was like, oh, well, I want to play Wario's story to see why he's beating up the mad scientist and like what that's all about. And then at the end of Wario's level, story mode, he doesn't beat up the scientist. The scientist runs away. I was like, what the heck? I feel like one team forgot to talk to the other team as far as who was animating it. But the story mode, you know, it really doesn't add anything beyond just, you know, a couple of dialogue boxes in between matches. And Wario and Mario's paths are almost identical. You know,
and in the Wario thing, he runs away with the pills.
Yes.
So the Mario ending is Mario like vanquishes disease or whatever.
Yeah, and then he returns home victorious.
In the Wario ending, Wario still didn't win, did he?
No. And I guess, I mean, he is sort of a anti-hero sort of character, so maybe it's like, you know, he can never catch a break, but nope.
It's just an odd tone to just be like, no, you don't actually get that.
Yeah, you win the game, but you still lose. So there are a drastically higher number of game modes. We played through these right before recording. In addition to the classic Dr. Mario formula, there's the story mode we just talked about. There's Versus, which is the same as the, you know, NES version of you're just clearing blocks to send, you know, things over. Flash is where you have to target specific viruses in order to clear the screen. Marathon is where so here's the mode where viruses are spreading. Marathon is that viruses are appearing from the bottom of the screen constantly. There's no way to clear the screen. It's how long can you last before you die? And then score attack was how many points can you get in a specific amount of time? And if you play alone, it is a certain point goal you have to beat before time runs out.
On the marathon thing.
Yeah.
Because I did not play that. So with the viruses appearing, is that just them appearing in empty spaces at the bottom? Or is that the whole thing moving upward and them taking in new rows?
I believe it's the whole thing moves.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's neat that they found multiple ways to play this game. I mean, you can't change too much without it feeling like not Dr. Mario. Mike, having just played through these Flash, these, you know, sort of versus modes, any thoughts on the different ways to play Dr. Mario in the 64 version?
Well, I think one of the interesting decisions with the four-player
versus, talk about that. Yes.
Is the decision that, so when you get combos, you can send these bits of pills to other players.
Yeah, and it's like a sabotage.
Yeah. In four-player, this has the mechanism that depending on the color of the first combo, it will determine which player it goes to. So this isn't necessarily going to be the right colors, but the idea is that effectively, if your first combo is red, it goes to the player on your left. If the first combo is blue, it goes to the player on your right. And if the first combo is yellow, it goes to the remaining player.
The player you're not touching. Interesting. And
I cannot imagine
strategically using that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like I saw that and just like, I cannot fathom strategically knowing like I am going to hit this person with a combo. It really like, it doesn't interesting to me. It feels more like it's a randomization effect, if anything, to just spread it out.
Yeah. You learn this by reading the manual, but like, I mean, I don't think I don't think anybody knows that. I think you just play Dr. Mario and just try to deal with whatever is sent your way. I thought the four-player mode was kind of cool, though, even though it was just you, me, and some bots. You know, interesting in that it reverts the graphics back to the NES style, so it doesn't look as good, but you know what? They fit four games onto the screen vertically. I think they kind of get applause for that even functioning. And it felt fun to be on the same team, like a co-op puzzle game. I don't know. I enjoyed myself. I know this isn't really your cup of tea, but is there a multiplayer puzzle game you enjoy where it's like you're sabotaging your opponent? Or are you more like a solo player? I feel like you usually play puzzle games just to beat the puzzle.
I think for puzzles, it is probably more solo.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a feeling.
There's definitely none that I think about as more of a multiplayer thing than a solo thing.
Yeah. Some Joy-Cons for Dr. Mario 64, you know, it doesn't really take advantage of the higher graphical capabilities of the 64. You know, you compare this to Super Mario 64, Mario Kart 64, Pilot Wings, you know, it's very bare bones. They don't really do a whole lot with the extra abilities of the system. And there's no new mechanics. There's no new virus types. There's no new pill shapes. And it's one of those games where I try not to criticize it for what it could have been when I think it's pretty, you know, functional as is. But there's definitely a feeling of, well, this is basically the same game on the Nintendo, just a little gussied up. Anything that annoyed you about Dr. Mario 64 that was unique to this game versus the old one?
I don't understand what the heck the point of the replay is, unless maybe I was supposed to hold a button down or something, because the replay button goes to like the very beginning of the match and then immediately goes to like the last, like who won. And I'm not sure what's going on with that replay.
Yeah. What Mike's referring to is we were playing this game and we were trying to do an extra match. And so Mike kept hitting replay thinking, oh, let's play again. But no, it's a live action replay of the game. And you know, it kept jumping to the end, Mike, because you were pressing buttons. If you didn't press a button, it would have shown us the entire match. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, but like who would watch? Who would watch that? Like, because if you want to see like, oh, what went wrong? Right. Like, oh, how'd I lose? Well, the replay should start maybe 10 seconds from the end of the match. Don't start over at the beginning. What maniac is going to rewatch the entire face-off just to see what happened? Do you see what I'm saying? It seems like a really weird way to do it. And I don't think there's like a fast forward function. I think you could either just watch it or skip to the end, like you said.
Yeah, that feels weird. Almost then like, or even if it's, you know, 30 seconds or something, like there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
A lot of time. Anything else to say about Dr. Mario 64 before we render our verdicts?
I don't think so. I think to a large extent, it feels much the same as Dr. Mario, which to me, I'm not bothered by things like the graphics or the features in that sense, because to me, that's as much as I'm expecting.
Right. You don't want any more necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's a simplicity to puzzle games that I think are much more about the complexity is getting better rather than the game getting harder or the game getting more intricate.
Right. All right. So let's render each game either a Nintendo or a Nintendon't. Let's start off with the Nintendo release, Dr. Mario. Mike, Nintendo or Nintendon't for you?
I think I'm going Nintendon't. I think it just never really captures me.
So what's interesting is that I was originally a Nintendo on this one. In fact, I even wrote it in my notes. It is, you know, an iconic puzzle game. And, you know, despite being so bare bones, I liked that on the NES, I can rewind using the Nintendo Switch Online. So I can fix mistakes in a way that you don't get to do in even modern puzzle games. Like when you're playing Tetris Effect Connected or whatever, and that came out a couple of years ago, I don't think there's like a oops rewind button. And I really, really liked that. And so I was originally going to say Dr. Mario is a Nintendo, but it should be used as training wheels for Dr. Mario 64. That was my theory. And then in playing Dr. Mario 64 competitively against you, I realized I sort of hamstrung myself. I got used to the ability to rewind, and I think it made me worse facing off against you. And I found myself making more mistakes than I realized because I was used to rewinding time. So because the other game is so much better, I'm going to say Dr. Mario is a Nintendon't. But that's because I think Dr. Mario 64 is the Nintendo. I really, in fact, I Nintended. Wait a minute. What did I do last time? I have a sound effect. Hold on. Oh, wait a minute. That wasn't loud enough. All right. Sorry. I want to celebrate when I've beaten a game on here. I beat Dr. Mario 64 as Mario. I beat it as Wario. I think everything that makes Dr. Mario a classic is here with better visuals and, you know, more modes. So I found Dr. Mario disturbingly addictive, pun definitely intended.
Yeah, so I think you can say you beat Dr. Mario 128 then.
Okay, so there was a game called Mario 128 that was never released. Are you realize that?
Yes, I'm making a very deep cut and not just adding 64 to itself.
Yeah. Okay, that was weird. Yes, I beat Dr. Mario 64 twice. So that is 128 Dr. Mario's worth of victory. So what about the sequel then? Is it still a Nintendon't for you because it's basically the same game that you don't really enjoy?
I think I'm still going to say a Nintendon't. I think the story mode did actually add something that was a little bit interesting to go through.
Right.
However, I then also hit a point where I just stopped progressing.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, well, this has been a few times through on one of them, and I'm not getting past this. Right. And I'm not having fun not getting past this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll admit, even though I shook my little tambourine and played my stupid sound effect, yeah, I beat Dr. Mario 64, and yes, you can't rewind on Nintendo 64 games, but to beat the final bosses, I would save the game when it was going well. And then if I lost, I would reboot to the point of the puzzle that I wasn't screwing it up. So I still basically rewound. I did still sort of cheat, but I don't know though. These games are hard. I still think it's worth celebrating. Well, Mike, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion here. So we will need the listeners to chime in and break the tiebreaker on Dr. Mario 64. I'm a Nintendo. I'm a Nintendon't. What do you think? Be sure to let us know in the comments below and like, follow, and subscribe if you think we've earned it. Join us next time as the Pinkalypse begins. We are finally diving into the monumentous number of Kirby games available on the Nintendo Switch Online Retro Service. We'll be playing Kirby's first three games, Kirby's Dream Land, Kirby's Adventure, and Kirby's Dream Land 2. So boot up Nintendo Switch Online, give the games a try, and then join us next time. This has been the Old Switcheroo. We've been talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I've been Mike.
And I've been JMO. Game on, everyone. Are you familiar with Moulin Rouge?
What was that?
Moulin Rouge, the movie.
Yes.
So if I say the part where Toulouse-Lautrec says, like, everything's going so... Oh, hold on. Is it him or is it Ziegler? Someone says, like, everything's going so well, and it's basically, like, the scene right before everything goes bad. I think about that quote a lot while playing puzzle games.